Om Agyanati Manandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Mandeham Shigaro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigram Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Vrijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Svitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishubhanu Siddha Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kapa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patidanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitinanda Shedvaiti Gadadhar Shivasiddhi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter... Canto 9, Chapter 6, The Downfall of Sabari Muni. And we're beginning with text number 28. And I'm just going to read the translations until we get up to text 40. When the Brahmana got up from bed and saw the water pot empty, they inquired who had done this work of drinking the water meant for begetting a child. So, apparently one king, those who haven't been here, he and his wives retired into the forest, and they were anxious to begin a son, and somehow or another, the sages, being compassionate upon them, the brahmanas, did a yajna to satisfy Indra in order to get a son. And the yajna resulted in a glass of water. And apparently the king, being thirsty one night, got up and he was in the arena of sacrifice and he drank the water. It's called an energized water. And we'll find out what happened. When the brahmanas came to understand that the king, inspired by the supreme controller, had drunk the water, they exclaimed, "Alas, the power of providence is real power. No one can counteract the power of the supreme." In this way, they offered their respectful obeisances unto the Lord. Therefore, in due course of time, a son, with all the good symptoms of a powerful king, came forth from the lower right side of King Yudhishthira's abdomen. The baby cried so much for breast milk that all the brahmanas were very unhappy. "Who will take care of this baby?" they said. Then Indra, who was worshipped in that yajna, came and solaced the baby. Do not cry, Indra said. Then Indra put his index finger in the baby's mouth and said, you may drink me. Because Yuvanashvas, the father of the baby, was blessed by the Brahmins, he did not fall victim to death. After this incident, he performed severe austerities and achieved perfection in that very spot. Mandata, the son of Yuvanashva, was a cause of fear for Ravana and other thieves and rogues who caused anxiety. O King Parikshit, because they feared him, the son of Yuvanashva was known as Trasadasyu. His name was given by King Indra. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the son of Yuvanashva was so powerful that when he became emperor, he ruled the entire world consisting of seven islands without any second ruler. So seven islands is a little bit bigger than Manhattan. It's referring to Bhumandala. It's big seven islands, of which we're in a very tiny place called Bardvarsha in Jambudweep. We're in one of the sections called Jambudweep, which is just surrounding Mount Meru, and Mount Meru and Jambudweep, Plekshadweep, Samantadweep. They extend out for, I forget how many billions of miles. Supreme Personality of Godhead is not different from the auspicious aspects of great sacrifices, such as the ingredients of the sacrifice, the chanting of Vedic hymns, the regulative principles, the performer, the priest, the results of the sacrifice, the area of sacrifice, arena of sacrifice, and the time of sacrifice. Knowing the principles of self-realization, Mandata worshiped that transcendently situated Supreme Soul, the personality, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, who comprises all the demigods. He also gave immense charity to the Brahmanas, and thus he performed yajna to worship the Lord. All places where the sun rises on the horizon, shining brilliantly, to where the sun sets, are known as the possession of the celebrated Mandata, the son of Yuvanashva. And who is Mandata's son that we know from the Krishna book? Narayani, who is Mandata's son? Who did Krishna meet in the cave? Was that? Muchakunda, yes. Muchakunda. Mandata begat three sons in the womb of Bindu Mati, the daughter of Shashi Bindu. These sons were Puru Kutsa, Ambarish, and Muchakunda, a great mystic yoga. These three brothers had 50 sisters who all accepted the great sage Sambari as their husband. So now we're up to the text 40. And the second half of it is on the board. So we'll just go, actually I'm not even going to read this. We're just going to read the translation, the purport. Sambari Rishi was engaged in austerity deep in the water of the river Jamuna when he saw a pair of fish engaged in sexual affairs. Thus he perceived the pleasure of sex life, and induced by this desire, he went to King Mandata and begged for one of the king's daughters. In response to this request, the king said, O Brahmana, any of my daughters may accept any husband according to her personal selection. Purport. This is the beginning of the story of Sambari Rishi. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Mandata was the king of Mathura, and Sambari Rishi was engaged in austerity while submerged deep within the river Jamuna. When the Rishi felt sex desire, he emerged from the water and went to King Mandata to ask that one of the king's daughters become his wife. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskyatya De Satarne. So maybe somewhat perplexing, we're almost up to the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which will talk about Krishna's Leela. And in the 9th canto, there are so many different activities that do not appear to be appropriate for the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the sense that we have one prince falling in love with a apsara, Urvashi, becoming so much overwhelmed with love and lust for her that he went practically crazy. We have this story now of Ambarish, we had this story of Ambarish offended by Durvasa Muni. We have Sabari Muni offending Garuda. It's a canto of disasters. Why do we have a canto of so many problems, material problems, in the heavenly planets, on this planet, on who knows what other planet, just one problem after another, especially due to offenses against Vaishnavas, and the resulting problems that came to the offender? Because we can understand that it is not so easy to actually enter into the pastimes of Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yesham antagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva moha nirmukva bhajante mam drida vrataha. Those who have passed their lives in practicing the regular principles of freedom, who become free from sinful reactions, have acted piously, have become free from the dualities of delusion, can accept devotional service and engage in it with determination. So it's not so easy to accept pure devotional service, what to speak of to engage in it with full determination. Prabhupada writes in the purport that generally in the beginning one tries to regulate one's sinful activities through the religious teachings, various religious teachings. Then one rises to the platform of acting piously. One learns how to tolerate sinful activities and begins to accept devotional service. So this is generally Chatura Vida Bhajante Mam Jana Sukritina Arjuna Arta Jignasya Artarati Gyani Cha Bharatar Shiva. There are four kinds of pious people. They perform service to Krishna, but with some material desire. Generally, stress, sinful activities, they result in stress. And therefore, many people, like in the case of Gajendra, approach Krishna not knowing very much about Krishna, not really caring very much about Krishna, but interested that Krishna will be able to free, or Gajendra was thinking maybe Krishna can free me, or Vishnu can free me from this problem I've developed in my leg. And therefore he put up a lotus flower asking for the Supreme to come and help out his sore foot. And indeed Krishna came and took care of his sore foot. Prabhupada was on a train one time and some with his disciples, and some of his Indian gentlemen wanted to come into the car to get their blessings from Srila Prabhupada, although the disciples did not allow that. But somehow or another, they caught Prabhupada's eye, and Prabhupada felt obliged to invite them to come into his train car. And so, Prabhupada asked them, "So what can I do for you?" And they folded their hands and said, "Swamiji, we want your blessings." So Prabhupada said, "Oh, what kind of blessings do you want?" So one man said, "Well, my foot, I have this wart on it. I cannot cure the wart. I need your blessings." Another said, "My daughter, I have to get her married. I don't have enough money. Please give me your blessings." So Prabhupada pointed to the saffron cloth of his sannyasis and said, "This is my blessings." And the Indian gentleman folded their hands together and said, "Swamiji, you look very tired. We don't want to bother you. Maybe we'll come back for your blessings later." And no more Indian gentlemen asking for blessings. So generally people are trying to get free from stress in this material world, especially old age, disease, and death. The whole material world is seeking refuge out of death. And those who can actually get some relief from their material problems, then they seek some material comfort, like Dhruva Maharaj. He wanted a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather. And those who get free from such distress feel some material comfort. They want something even better. They become jignasu or inquisitive, like the sages of Namasharanya. Is there a better place to enjoy than this material, temporary earth planet? Maybe the heavenly planets we can enjoy. Maybe on Brahmaloka, maybe mystic power. Where is the real happiness we're looking for? And ultimately the Brahmins say the real happiness is become Brahman, become Brahman. But this is all within the material sphere. In order to enter into the spiritual sphere, we have to tolerate not only the painful aspect of material existence, but even the so-called pleasurable aspects of material existence. And both the painful and the pleasurable aspects of material existence are described in the ninth canto. From this earthly planet up to the heavenly planets, the possibilities of enjoyment, and how often the problems arise out of Vaishnava Parad, Bhayam Dvitiya Bhinaveshitasya, Ishadabhatasya Vipariyo Smriti. As soon as we turn our face away from Krishna, then at once we become Krishna's competitor. Maya will make us Krishna's competitor. And the result of all of this is we become full of anxiety. Because when we accept this body as the supreme, then we have a problem. Namely, our supreme worshipable deity, this body, is going to die. Sorry for the bad news. That everyone's going to die. If you want to find out your future, how much progress you're going to make in the material world, and what will be the result, all you do is have to look at your palm, and this will tell you everything. Everyone can look at their palm. So there's one line here called the lifeline. It starts between the index finger and the thumb, and it goes down. So everyone can look and see. It goes down, 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 down. And what happens at the end? It's the end. I can tell you with 100% certainty that that's your future. You can give me a donation afterwards for my palmistry. But that is our future. So everyone's trying to exist out of death, but because we're competing against Krishna, we're in the illusion that we're going to die. Actually, we don't die. We're all going to live forever. Unfortunately, there's a difference between living forever in the spiritual world and living forever in hell. One time, Srila Prabhupada was in England, and the reporters asked Prabhupada, "Do you actually believe in hell?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes." He said, "England is hell." So we don't have to worry about being in hell. We're already in hell, trying to enjoy in hell. But we think that this is heaven. One man was told by one priest that if you drink, you're going to go to hell. So he said, "But my mother drinks, so she's going to go to hell. But my father also drinks, so he's going to go to hell too. But all my brothers and sisters, they all drink. Well, they're all going to go to hell. But my relatives and friends, they also drink. Well, they're all going to hell." So the conclusion was that if my mother, my father, my sisters, my brothers, my friends, my relatives, they're all in hell, then hell is heaven. But this ninth canto is meant to discourage us from seeking happiness in the material world. And in the midst of that, as a result of that, offending Vaishnavas or ultimately offending Krishna, becoming Krishna's competitor. Now we think, "I'm very innocent. I just want to lord it over or become, well, I want to become a demigod. Or I want to become a powerful personality with mystic power. What's the harm?" Well, the harm is that one has to accept a material body. One has to accept a false ego. And that false ego means I accept myself as the competitor against Krishna. It is a result of enviness. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Because you are never envious of me, Arjuna." Now he's going to speak the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So of course, everyone thinks they're a nice person. No one thinks they're envious. No one thinks they're doing practically anything wrong. As I told the story of Two Gun Pete, you've heard of Two Gun Pete? Isn't that in the Bhagavatam? No. Oh, anyhow, it's Two Gun Pete was living in Chicago. And he was famous because he would always kill his victims. He was a member of the mafia, And he would always kill his victims with two guns. So one day he was on Lover's Lane enjoying Madhurya Rasa. And one unfortunate policeman committed an apparat because he shone his flashlight into the car of Two Gun Pete, revealing the conjugal pastimes, which was supposed to be confidential. Needless to say, Two Gun Pete became disturbed and he took his gun and he shot the policeman. In order to protect his reputation, he got out of the car and he took the policeman's gun and shot him again. Unfortunately for Two Gun Pete, the other policemen did not appreciate his leela. And therefore they pursued him into his hideout, and there was a gun battle. And before Two Gun Pete lost the gun battle, he wrote one letter to his mother. And the letter said, "My dear mom, I'm actually a nice person. Unfortunately, some people misunderstand me and my activities. So please, take care of my cat. Your son, Petey. Goodbye." So everyone thinks they're a nice person. Whatever they do, they somehow or another can justify. But actually, there are no nice people in the material world. There are those who are devotees. They're nice people. Those who are aspiring to become devotees, they're trying to become nice people. And those who are not devotees or aspiring to become devotees, they're not very nice people. Therefore, Krishna says, there are fallible people and there's infallible. There's demons and then there's devotees. So Krishna seems to have a very black and white perspective on things. There are devotees, there are demons, there are those who are aspiring to become devotees. They're also appreciated by Krishna. And there are those who are trying to compete against Krishna in some way or another. And all the different 14 planetary systems. And this ninth canto will reveal some of these different personalities. And if we want to actually enter into the 10th canto, because it doesn't stop at simply accepting pious activities, we have to tolerate duality. We'll find out that Subhara Muni couldn't tolerate the fact that Garuda came and took one of his friends away. And therefore he committed Vaishnava Aparad. So unless we learn tolerance, the material world exists in intolerance. We can't tolerate the fact that we're not God. We look around and we see, is this person worshiping me? If they're not, we become envious of them. How dare you not worship me? Where is your God, Prahlad? You ask someone, Hiranyakashipu, ask Prahlad, what is the best thing you've learned in school? And Prahlad Maharaj replied, the best thing I've learned in school, my dear father, is that you're a number one fool. So Prahlad could not tolerate, Hiranyakashipu could not tolerate that. And we're thinking, wow, this is a big demon, no tolerance. He didn't realize he had a pure devotee as his son. He should have acted respectfully towards him. He should have inquired from him about the science of devotional service. And meanwhile, we look at different people and we have different thoughts which are not very pleasant. He is my friend. He is my enemy. Adyo bijava annasmi konyosi sadrishamaya yakshe dashami modisha ityagyana vimohitaha idam adyamaya labdva imam prapse manoritam idam astiyam apime bhavishati punardhanam adyo maya hitakshatra hanishe chapuranapi ishvaraham hambogi siraham balavan sukhi. So much is mine today, and it'll increase in the future. So much money that do I have, and I'll get more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies, you'll also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am perfect. I am powerful. And I am happy. I am surrounded by rich and aristocratic relatives. I will perform some sacrifice. I will give some charity. I will go to the heavenly planets. And according to Purnachandra Maharaj, I will kiss the apsaras there. In this way, the demoniac are bewildered by ignorance. So it is not just a few people in the material world who are bewildered. Everyone in the material world who cannot tolerate the dualities of material existence, who haven't risen up to the platform of pure devotional service, to Nishta, who have not understood in truth the personality of Godhead, who are not engaged in meditating in trance upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead out of love, they have a ways to go before they can actually enter into the platform that's required to understand the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, we can read the Srimad Bhagavatam, but we should realize our limitations. We should realize that we're something like the person who has a bottle of honey, and instead of entering into the honey, they're licking the surface of the bottle. that we have to not consider ourselves to be advanced devotees as long as we're in the material concept of life. Very simple test. All I do is have to ask myself, honestly, who do I really identify myself with? Do I only identify myself as Gopi Bharata Pada Kamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa? And if the answer is no, I have some material concept of life. I'm actually sometimes seeing people as my friend, sometimes as my enemy, sometimes it's in between. Sometimes I'm anxious, I'm happy when I get gain, I'm lamenting when I get loss. Therefore, I'm not on the Brahma Bhuta platform. I'm not on the spiritual platform. What to speak of understanding who I actually am? I'm walking around in a big bubble of illusion. And at the same time, in my bubble of illusion, I'm given the opportunity to perform devotional service by practice, by hearing from the spiritual masters, by hearing from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. I have an opportunity to utilize this body, to utilize my mind, to utilize my intelligence in Krishna's service, to utilize my soul in Krishna's service, so that one day I can actually enter into these pastimes, not only the 10th canto, but even in these cantos, the first 9 cantos. I can actually experience what is actually going on in the Bhagavatam. In the first canto, it said that Narada Muni has kindly appeared in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. You're going to sit right in front of that, Mataji. In other words, as Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, that for the neophyte devotee, they like to hear about Krishna book. They'll like to hear about it because it seems it's nice relationships between young girls and one nice young boy. But if they hear with the right attitude from the right source, they'll also be able to make some advancement. On the other hand, those who are Madhyama Adhikari devotees, those who are actually serious, well, we should say, those who are beyond the material modes of material nature and practicing devotional service out of love for Krishna, in cooperation with Krishna's devotees and with compassion for innocent people and a distaste or for those who are not or who are averse to Krishna, a distaste for those who are adverse to Krishna, then for them hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, they become enlivened and enlightened. And for the pure devotee who's actually on the platform of Krishna consciousness, they relish transcendental pleasure when they hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tu shanti cha ramanti cha. So devotional service to this Bhagavatam is not just an intellectual exercise. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says he's the source of everything. It's not easy to be the source of everything. Even with practice, we can't become the source of everything. And our subject matter is about Krishna, the source of everything. Mach chita, mach kata prana, bodhi antash parash param, katai antash ramam nityam, tu shanti cha ramanti cha. We're learning how to utilize our energy, our prana, and our chitta, our consciousness in Krishna's service. And by doing so, we gain some satisfaction or some ecstasy, depending on what level of devotional service we're practicing. And if we actually get some benefit from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, then the result should be, then we should try to become more steady and more enthusiastic in our devotional service. That means we have to give up these conceptions of hankering and our attachment to hankering, lamentation, which result in seeing friends and enemies and so many varieties of personalities in this world and not seeing within Krishna and the soul. and therefore not rendering service to either Krishna or the souls in this world. That we don't render service to Krishna and to all the living entities in this material world, it means that we're envious. And as long as we're envious of Krishna and the other living entities in this world, we cannot enter into pure devotional service. We cannot become happy. We cannot become free from hankering, lamentation. We cannot become equally minded. And therefore, we remain on some level on the material platform. Therefore, we have to learn how to use our chitta, our prana, in Krishna's service, become more steady, more enthusiastic, and then dadami buddhi yogam tam. Krishna will give us more and more realizations of how to make progress in pure devotional service. And ultimately, tesham eva nukam paratam. Krishna will become compassionate to us. Not because we're great devotees. He'll become compassionate because we actually become humble. We realize that if we want to actually do some service, render some real service to Krishna, then we have to become humble. We have to become like Srimati Radharani. We have to become compassionate to all living entities and humble, that we're simply the insignificant servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna. Then we can become like Srimati Radharani, like Krishna, and therefore we'll become empowered by Krishna Shakti, Vinanaya Tara Pavartana, by Krishna Shakti, by the internal energy of Krishna, which can spread the Hare Krishna movement. Without Krishna, without Krishna's mercy, without his energy, without Krishna, without our surrendering to Krishna and invoking his compassion to become his instrument, then we can make some attempt to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, but we'll only be successful up to a certain level. Because if we ourselves are not fully conscious of Krishna, we can only help others come to the level that we're on. So if one is actually non-envious, one is actually a servant of Krishna's servants, then the result is that Krishna will become compassionate and will become empowered to actually do something to effectively spread Krishna consciousness. So this ninth canto are lessons for us not to become overly proud that we've read so many cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, to actually take into our heart the fact that we have to purify ourselves, not only for our own benefit, to actually develop our eternal relationship with Krishna, but also to become an effective instrument for Krishna, so we can help Krishna in his mission to bring his other children back to the spiritual kingdom. So as I said before, as Srila Prabhupada once wrote to me, he said that we've just had Rath Yatra in San Francisco, and 10,000 boys and girls were dancing and chanting in full spiritual ecstasy. That I've heard that in Buffalo, that you're distributing back to Godhead. Oh, in New York, I've heard that in just 2 weeks, they've distributed 3,000 back to Godheads. And I heard that in Buffalo, you're also distributing back to Godhead very nicely. So please continue in this way, and your success in life is assured. As Krishna sees that you're helping to bring his other children back to the spiritual kingdom, then he'll bestow all his blessings upon you. That Krishna is never ungrateful for our efforts to serve him, rest assured. So we have to try to make progress ourselves, and at the same time, try to become an instrument for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission under the guidance of Srila Prabhupada, so we can actually do something for our benefit and for the benefit of the suffering conditioned souls in this world. So today is the appearance day of Radhakund, and I was asked to say something about Radhakund. So it's nice hearing these pastimes, and we should learn how to hear the pastimes. As a matter of fact, we should learn how to hear so we actually experience. Because, as I said, Krishna consciousness is not just for some intellectual knowledge, it's actually meant for experience. Unless we're experiencing Krishna consciousness, then our knowledge will remain simply theoretical. So Radhakund began when Krishna killed one demon named Aristasura, the bull demon. And after killing the bull demon, the gopis actually had urged Krishna to kill the demon, because the demon came into Vrindavan and it said his tail was hovering above in the clouds. And he's winning, or whatever. He made some sounds, huffing. And he attacked Krishna. Eventually Krishna picked him up on the horns, threw him, and then eventually he grabbed his horns and he broke the horns and he kicked the demon to death. He stomped the demon to death. So then Krishna wanted to enjoy the rasa dance with the gopis. After saving the gopis, he wanted to have the rasa dance. And the gopis said no. Jokingly said no. That don't touch us. That you've just killed a bull and you become contaminated. So we don't want you to touch us or associate with us. But Krishna said that I killed the bull, but he was a demon. The gopi said, well, it doesn't really matter. He was in the form of a bull, and therefore you killed a bull. Therefore you become contaminated. So Krishna jokingly said, so what do you want me to do? So the gopi said, you should go to all the sacred rivers in this world, in the universe, and you should bathe. And after you bathe in these sacred rivers, then you'll become purified, and we can then engage in pastimes with you. So Krishna said, well, that's going to take some time. So he put his heel into the ground, and he told all the sacred rivers to come from the universe. So all the rivers came, Saraswati, Yamuna, Sindhu, Kaveri, all the sacred rivers in the universe came. And the gopi said, well, how do we know that these are actually the sacred rivers? Because they came in their personified form. So Krishna kicked a little bit more dirt, and they formed a nice big hole in the ground. All the sacred rivers entered into the ground. And Krishna went and bathed himself became known as the Shyamakund, and then said, the gopi said, all right, you're pure, but Krishna said, well, I can't really dance with you because you're all impure, because you took the side of a demon, therefore you've all become contaminated. So what to do? So Radharani said, all right, we'll bathe in the sacred river Manasagangi. We'll bring that sacred river here. So in the place where the Aristasura hoof had entered into the ground, the gopis dug out with their bracelets. They dug out a hole which was equal to the Shyamakund. So Krishna was quite surprised they could dig such a big hole in such a short time. And then they lined up, they were going to line up all the way to Manasaganga and bring the water from Manasaganga. Previously, Krishna had brought the Ganga there in order so that Nanda Maharaj and the other residents of Vrindavan didn't have to go so far away to bathe in the Ganges. So in order to save the gopis and Srimati Radharani, the endeavor from trying to bring all this water from such a far distance, he said all the personified rivers came before Srimati Radharani. Or Krishna suggested, well, why don't you just all bathe in my kund? They said, no, it's contaminated with your sinful reactions from killing a bull. So then Krishna asked the head of the sacred rivers to come, and with folded hands he asked Srimati Radharani to kindly allow the sacred rivers into her kund, so that they would get the blessings of having her association, association of her friends. So out of compassion for the sacred rivers, Srimati Radharani agreed, and the sacred rivers broke the barrier between Shyamakund and Radhakund, and they all enter into Radhakund, and all the gopis, they bathe there, and then Krishna had his rasa dance. So today is the appearance day when Shyamakund was created and when Radhakund was created. The last part of my talk is I'm supposed to read from the third verse of the Dhammaka Rastava prayer. So I'm not going to give any explanation, I'm just going to read it. Idik Rik Swabir Idik Swalila Bir Ananda Kunde Swagosham Nimanjantam Akyampayantam Tadieshu Geshu Bakera Ditatvam Unakram Prematas Tam Chatavritti Vande. By such childhood pastimes as this, he is drowning the inhabitants of Gokul in pools of ecstasy, and is revealing to those devotees who are absorbed in knowledge of His Supreme Majesty the opulence that He is only conquered by devotees whose pure love is imbued with intimacy and is free from all conceptions of awe and reverence. With great love, I again offer my obeisances to Lord Damodar, again, the purport of my class is that one way or another, we should understand our actual position in the material world, our fallen position, and do something to help ourselves become elevated. One time one devotee said, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. And Prabhupada's reply was, you're not the most anything. Another time a devotee said, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. So Prabhupada's reply was, if you're so fallen, why don't you do something about it? So we should recognize the fact that we're fallen, and in a humble way, in the association of devotees, hear from them how to practice devotional service with more determination, more steadiness, more enthusiasm, more care and attention, and gradually make progress to get the mercy of Krishna, so we understand what is actually the science of Krishna consciousness, and we can develop compassion for ourselves and all living entities, and become a sincere servant of the servant of the servants of Krishna. So I'll stop there. Any comments or questions? Yes.
Arjuna was explaining to Krishna, or not complaining, but he said that these sinful activities are almost enforced upon us. You know, that we're forced to act sinfully. So if one is being forced, then how can we blame?
Well, we can be blamed. Ultimately, Krishna doesn't conclude, as Arjuna said. He said that there's a way out. He said, Tasma Twam Indriyanya Do Niyamya Bharatarshava Papmanam Prajihyenam Jnana Vijnana Nashinam. Well, he says a lot of things. First, he says, we're being the covering potency, Abhyatmaka Shakti and Prakatmaka Shakti, the forcing potency of Maya, they're our enemy. And they are situated in different places in the body. And they arise generally out of our acceptance of false ego. We don't have to accept our false ego. We can regulate our senses by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and therefore utilize our intelligence ultimately to connect with Krishna in Buddha Yoga. And if we do that, then gradually the force of material nature will diminish, and the force of the spiritual energy will increase, and therefore we'll become liberated, and we won't be bothered by this problems of material existence. So it's up to us. If we accept devotional service in Krishna consciousness and try to tolerate the dualities of material existence, we can gradually rise up to the platform of pure devotional service. And if we don't do that, if we're not interested in that, or we don't have the intelligence how to do that, then we have to remain being like a ping pong ball, being battered back and forth by the material energy. That's up to us what we want to do. Yes.
Another classic Prabhupada story in the same regard. The devotee said, Srila Prabhupada must have fallen into Maya. The Prabhupada said, you're always in Maya. Sometimes you fall into Krishna.
Yes. Anything else? Yes.
So we have after that he got the reward and he realized his mistake. But for Vaishnava offense, we have to approach Vaishnava. Then we will be forgiven. So is it so we will approach the Prabhupada for his offense? Forgive me or something like that. Just like Amrish Maharaj, we also have to approach Amrish Maharaj. So is there incidents like this? How is it forgiven? Because we hear that Sobhari Muni went back to order.
No. Well, I don't know. Sobhari Muni, yeah. In any case, he suffered the sinful reaction of cursing Garuda. So whether he personally asked, just like Durvasa Muni, the Sudarsan Chakra was chasing him and was going to burn him. Now, if the Sudarsan Chakra would have caught up with him and burned him, he would have gotten free from the sinful reaction, at least partially. But it didn't happen. He took a more pleasant route. He asked for forgiveness. Now, Sabari Muni had to suffer their sinful reactions of cursing Garuda, and when those sinful reactions diminished, then he came to his senses again. Prabhupada gives the example, just like, for instance, if a murderer kills someone, then the state should kill the murderer, and then he'll get free from his sinful reactions. So much so that he doesn't have to necessarily suffer the sinful reactions of his murder, of his killing someone. Now, the murderer didn't personally probably go to the person he murdered, said, I'm sorry. But he had to suffer by being killed, and therefore that's a way of getting free from the sinful reactions. Thank you very much. Grandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.